Welcome to FSHD Straight Talk, the podcast where we dive deep into living with FSHD. I'm your host, Tim Hollenbach, and I'm on the journey with you. Having FSHD, I understand the challenges it brings to patients and their families. We're in this together, and this podcast is a space where we swap stories, share advice, and talk to experts to get the latest news. There's plenty to say about living with FSH muscular dystrophy, so let's get straight to it. Welcome all to another episode of the FSHD Straight Talk Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Hollenbach, and thanks for joining us here again on another hopefully fun episode that we have in store for you. This guest I met at a leadership conference that I went for the FSHD Society community of leaders that are your walk and roll leaders and your chapter director type leaders and leaders that are on some of the virtual groups. We're going to talk about one of those groups quite a bit today, and that's the Wellness Hour. So I want you to take a look at that and find out what they're about. I think it's a great group to be a part of. I'm going to look into that myself and probably join the next meeting, because after this episode, it really got me interested, because today's guest is going to be none other than Greg Lichtenstein. He is, it sounded like a little bit out of the Philadelphia area. He commented actually before we started recording on my Steeler terrible towel. So he's a fellow Steeler fan, which is always great. I always feel like I'm in good company when that happens. And we had this amazing conversation about, yes, his FSHD story, who Greg is, what he does. And he is a connector. He is a connector, and that's what he does for a job. I mean, he connects businesses and people within businesses so that they can help each other's businesses. And he's an entrepreneur coach, and so many things he brings to the table. One of the things I saw when I saw him speak, and he was on this meeting virtually, his demeanor, his way, very comfortable, very inviting, very pleasant. Really wanted to have him on the show as soon as I saw him speaking to the group virtually. And thank God that we get a nice packet of info, including people's emails. So I emailed him right away, and the rest is history. He accepted to be a guest on the show. And I think this episode is going to cover things that we need to hear about. We need to hear about the connectivity, your friends. What kind of friends do you have? Have they evolved? Have they changed as you have FSHD? Loneliness, how bad can loneliness be? What can it do to you physically, mentally? And the comparisons of that and other unhealthy things is very similar as if you're lonely. And it's not just FSHD. In our world in general, it seems like loneliness is becoming a more chronic problem more now than ever. People feeling more isolated, when in a time with technology, you think we'd be more connected. It's actually giving the opposite result. And Greg talks a little bit about that and how he does connect people in his work world and how he has taken that into the FSHD community. And with the FSHD Society's support and help, he's involved now with the Wellness Hour and the topics they cover. He talks about that as well. Just some really great takeaways within this episode. Listen for when he talks about confronting big challenges, because then it equals more experiences. That's fascinating. And that your friends shouldn't just be a number, like a large number. What's the quality of them? And of course, we even talk about early on here, even what he does for health, exercise. He was a yoga instructor. Fascinating. And how you should and definitely do yoga and just adapt it to what your body can do. So we wander into that conversation as well. So much to unpack in this episode. So I hope you enjoy it. So I won't leave you hanging any longer. Enough of me. On with the interview with Greg. So as promised, we have a great guest here today. As I was at the leadership conference, I always want to say convention, but really a conference, a great community of leaders. And I heard Greg, our guest here, speak a little bit. Greg Lichtenstein is our guest today. Greg, welcome. Welcome to the show. I know you're an active member, a leader in the FSHD Society and within the FSHD community. So when I heard you speak, I think you were at that conference via Zoom, if I recall correctly. And I thought you were fantastic. I'm like, oh, I like the way this guy presents himself. And even on Zoom, because that could be tough as we're doing this that way. So yeah, welcome. Thanks for being here. And thanks for being part of the community, a big, big part of it. And thanks for taking some time today so we can
thanks
talk.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. This is going to be a blast. So let's start where I mostly do, everybody that's kind of listening to the show. We know who you are, name and so forth, but tell us a little bit more about yourself and maybe your FSHD story.
Sure. I'll start with my FSHD story. This was not something that we knew about in our family.
Okay.
Although we used to tease my mother, who was very athletic, that she looked like she was missing some muscles behind her shoulder,
Really?
so that was always
Interesting.
interesting. But fast forward, I'm like 15, 16 years old, and I'm on the wrestling team, which is kind of amusing enough thought as it is. I was 15. I was almost 6 feet tall, but I was about 95 pounds.
Okay.
So, I would walk out in the mat and someone would, about 4'10", a whole lot wider, would be against it. Like against me, I wasn't, not to say I was a very good wrestler, I really wasn't. But so I was wrestling and I decided I needed to gain more strength, some bodily strength. So I entered upon a weightlifting program at the Y in the basement, with the guys that sort of took me under their wing. And for a year, I was a serious weightlifter. And at the end of that year, I could lift only the same amount of weights that I started with.
Really?
Yes. So I knew something was wrong then, because I was disciplined, I did it right, whatever. So that didn't really make sense. It didn't really bother me because I didn't want to be a professional wrestler or anything like that. But, it really wasn't until I was 25 that my sister, myself, and my mother were diagnosed clinically at the same time, because at that time they didn't have a test yet, genetic test for it. So, and I just was always into taking care of myself, so I just knew that I had to do a good job of doing that. And I think this is relevant because, if anybody ever asked me, like, well, what do you do in particular that was helpful for you in having FSHD? I'd say two things. I see a chiropractor and have seen a chiropractor every once a week for the last 45 years of my life. And, I think because of the muscles that aren't strong, the alignment of my, spine goes out all of the time, creating lots of, pains and pinched nerves and things like that. So I both exercise and I do chiropractic. And I think when I look at like the age that my mother started becoming incapacitated, I'm older than she is. She was when that happened. And I think I owe that to the fact I do yoga regularly. So I'm always stretching, the compensatory muscles that get overworked. I'm always doing those kinds of things. I think that's been very helpful to me.
I think you are spot on, right? I think most people we hear that have a little more flexibility, a little le maybe less pain. I think anything you do is going to come with some type of discomfort, soreness, pain, no matter what. And I always try to rationalize the exercise that frustrates me. I'm like, well, I don't know why I'm doing this. It doesn't do a lot anyway. But I thought, and it just hurts. And I go, well, it's going to hurt anyway, so I might as well exercise, right? So there's going to be some discomfort one way or the other. Now I am probably a victim of my own self-competition, and maybe I push it a little too hard. So I probably just do it to myself. But you talk about just exercise in general. I know specifically you said yoga, seeing a chiropractor once a week. That's a good discipline for sure. Is there any particular exercise outside of yoga? Is it lightweight training? Is it resistance training? Like what seems to be one of your better fits for that?
I'm now in a wheelchair as of about 2 years ago, so it's a gradual, decline. So I bike on a stationary bike a bit. We used to have dogs, and I would walk them,
Oh, sure.
two, three times a day. I mean, we did miles together. Not, it wasn't really that cardio, but I was very active, until just a few years ago. And I can't walk a dog now, but that was great. You get outside I was at one point, I was an advanced yoga practitioner. I say at one point, I know how to do the poses, and I can't do anywhere near the kinds of things I used to be able to do. But what's been helpful is the knowledge of how it should be done has helped me to figure out how can I compensate? How do I have to adjust this posture to get the intended effects?
Got it. There has to be some type of adaption, right, with
Absolutely,
yoga.
absolutely. And, you know, so it's not what I think is important. It's not either you do it, you know, the way it's supposed to be done, or you don't do it at all. You can adapt, you know, and yoga's like that. There are other things, obviously, but you adapt.
Yeah, and yoga is also a great exercise for your mind. It does seem to, the little I've done it, I probably should be more disciplined in it. I use someone on, yeah, I was referred to someone of a good friend of mine that's in wellness, and he says, you know, use Sarah Beth Yoga. There's a plug to her that she probably doesn't even know on YouTube, and he's like, she's got really simple movements. Some are longer, some are shorter videos, etc. And so I kind of go to that, and I kind of self-adapt in the home, but it's more by, oh, I can't do that, so let me hit pause and let me like kind of figure out how to do this. And
Yes.
because I think a lot of us, especially for me, if I went to a yoga class, I'd feel super awkward. Like there's no way they're all gonna be like, what is with this guy? Like he can't even lift his arms. Why is he here? You know? So there's that comfort factor that if I'm doing it at home. So do you think like at
Yes.
least do that, at least try to do it at home with some instructor, even if it's on a video?
I think, and you know, I may not be kind of the norm, but you know, I am rarely embarrassed.
Good for you. Good
You
for you.
know, so you know, I can't get up and down off the floor without like a folding chair. So, you know, for a while when I was before the pandemic, I was going to cl yoga classes, I would, you know, walk in with a folding chair, you know, and I would, you know, my mat, my folding chair, so I could get up and down. And listen, I, you know, people could quickly see that I'm doing what I can. You know, so doesn't bother me.
Good for you. I love that. I wish I had more of that. I think I have my moments of like
Very good.
confidence like that, but it sounds like it comes easy for you.
Listen, if you could have been a wrestler, you know, at a 6 feet and 95 pounds, you know, that's like, and not be embarrassed, that's
Yeah,
like everything, you
it's
know.
all easier from there.
Yeah.
When you were then diagnosed, you talked about your family. There wasn't really any connection, so it seemed that someone else had it. I think I'm in the similar boat that you are. Granted, I'm adopted, so I'm kind of guessing at that. But anything that my, parents now had records of, a little bit doesn't sound like it. But for you, like, what was then the family reaction? You know, if you started seeing signs of this at 15, 16, I can totally relate to what you're saying, where you're lifting weights like crazy and like nothing's happening. That kind of was my warning signs too. Granted, later in life, not as a teenager, but what was the family reaction? Like, is it just cold?
Kind of head in the sand, kind of. Yeah, like my mother did very little in response. And the other thing too was very difficult for me to watch was, you know, she had various operations like cervical, you know, back fusions and things like that over, which are natural when people have this. But the problem is, you know, maybe it was her generation or something. Whenever she went to a doctor and they said, this is what you should do, they usually said it in those days. You know, they didn't have any understanding of muscular dystrophy, and what they recommended was abusive. It was just abusive, and so you know, but she wouldn't, you know, stand, frankly, wouldn't stand up for herself and argue and say, no, I'm not going forward with that operation. I understand the consequences of not, you know, whatever, but the on balance, you're not offering me a decision, or I would get a second or third opinion. I mean, I like to tell this to people, they have to act as their own, you know, agent. And if they're not comfortable, they need to bring someone in who could do that. So just to give a quick example, and it doesn't apply anymore, but when we used to go in the doctors used to open their folders, like their manila folders with their information on it. I mean, you know, it goes to show how old I am. But so they would open their folder and I would open mine.
Oh, good for
And
you.
they were totally intimidated by that, which was, I have to say, part of the purpose. Because I would say, last time you said this. So not only am I paying attention, but I've done some research on what you're recommending. And here are my questions, here are my concerns, and you know, here's what I like and don't like. How are you going to respond to that? And you got to do that because, as everyone knows, the healthcare system is siloed. People don't want to spend
Too
a lot of
much.
time. You have to act as your own advocate.
Yeah.
So you have to do that. She did not do that, which gave me more, even more inspiration and motivation to do that myself.
It seems like that's the generation of, well, the doctor told me to do it, I'll do it.
Yeah.
Right. Or just avoid it, or avoid the doctor altogether. I think that was a
Yes.
little bit of both of my, parents. And now as they get older, as now my mom is just my mom and myself, and she's alive, and I see what she's going through with the struggles. And my dad has passed, and I'm like, wait a minute, dad took you to these doctor's appointments, didn't he say something when you were in these rooms? Because feel like I'm saying more than you are. And she's saying,
Yeah.
well, I would just go with what the doctor said. And I'm like, oh, well, that might not always be right. So I'm glad you bring that up, Greg, because you're right. You have to be your own advocate. Like, if something doesn't seem like it's the right fit for you, it's okay to
That's
question
right.
it without being disrespectful.
And sometimes you can't do it. Like, some days if you're sick, it's hard
Right.
to,
Right.
it is, and you don't feel well, it's hard to feel that. So what I tell people is then you have to find someone who's gonna, and you kind of authorize them. So, I'll bring my wife in and say, look, don't let this guy get away, or woman, whatever, with anything. These are the questions I want answers to, or else I, because quite frankly, doctors work for us. They
True.
can never forget that. If you don't like that doctor, or you're not getting help, go to another one. And
Right.
I say that because we hear in some sessions that people say, well, the doctor said this is what I should do. And we'll say, like, you've been doing it for 2 months and it's not helping.
Yeah. Right.
Doesn't work. So
Right.
gotta make a change,
Yeah. Yeah. You got to take a different course, a different course of
Yes.
action. If that's not working, that is the truth. Because we have this place, I think we put doctors on a pedestal, where
Yes.
their doctors are super smart and all this stuff. Well, I've known more of the dark side of the medical world, from equipment and insurances and so
Yes.
forth, and bad bedside manner. That's like, wow, okay, like, we are people. And that's, I think, also within our researchers. It's nice that I think the people I've come across very much know the people with the disease, not just the
Yes.
cells they see, and that does mean a lot that they're in the trenches with us because they seem to care. So there's not all bad doctors out there. I want to make sure.
Yes, I'm not. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But also, I happen to have an advanced degree. I have a PhD in business, and as a part of that training, you learn about scientific method, research methods, and even though I've applied it to non more social kind of phenomena, I like to be specific with the doctors to give them the kind of information that I think that they can use, make sense of, right? Because I understand what kind of the way they're looking at the world. So, they need help from the patient as well, because so we're in partnership with this. Anyway, that's
Well, no, it's tall, and I'm glad that we talked about it, because there is that part where, yeah, you're doing the physical things to keep you in shape, and then the doctors you see, and it's tough. Like, when you do go to the doctor, if it's once a year, it feels like they're more, documenting your demise more than they're offering to help anything. Stealing that line from a previous guest,
Yeah.
I love that line, and there is some truth to that. But yet it has to be documented. You have to do what you have to do. Now, when you're talking about the physical side, we've talked a lot about that. Do you do anything to kind of strengthen the mental approach, to FSHD, which can be extremely daunting?
Well, I've spent my life, I mean, this may be typical for a lot of people with FSHD, but I'm a very independent person. Always did things by myself, or could do a lot of things by myself. So this whole process of becoming, less and less, having less and less capacity, and having to ask for help, has been, as an emotional journey to be able to do that. It's like, that doesn't come, it didn't come naturally, because again, in my family of origin itself, whatever. But I find that it's important to do two things, and I have to remind myself to do this. One is tell people what's going on. Like people like my wife, my kid, whoever, who's no longer in the house, but what's going on, and then what help I need, because then they have the option to think of other ways of me getting that help, right? If they know
Right.
what's going on. So it's not just saying like, I've decided I want you to drive me here. And say like, oh, you mean you need to be driven there on a regular basis? Let's work out something, So by asking for support and admitting that you need it, you enable other people to help you in a more constructive and positive way. That's been a lifelong, I can do that pretty well now, but I have to tell you, ask my wife 20 years ago and 30 years ago, et cetera, she'll tell you it's been a growth curve.
Yeah. I think I'm still within the curve there. I'm not quite turned the corner. I'm still in that let me do it, let me figure it out mode. And then, then she'll dive in when I'm probably swearing like a sailor and things are going sideways. She's more of the savior of those types of moments for me. But you're right. You have to ask for help when you believe it that it will A, help you, and also it kind of helps the person offering. Right. I had someone tell me, don't deny someone the opportunity to help you if they're offering, like they want to, there's a reason why. It kind of alleviates, because sometimes I have even like the guilt of someone's got to do this for me. Now I'm taking away their time, something else they'd rather do, and this and that. But in a lot of cases, it's actually the opposite. Like they actually want to do something for you. And it builds kind of like that connection, if it's with your spouse or your family or your friends, or those that are helping. And that seems to be the segue into, sounds like maybe what your professional life is. You mentioned PhD in business, but I noticed within, you're part of the Wellness Hour group, and you use the term like a social phenomenon when you just described a little bit of that work that you're in. So you have me intrigued. What's your professional life in?
So I am an entrepreneur. I've started a number of businesses. I've coached entrepreneurs who've started up businesses, both in large companies and small companies. But one of kind of the most intriguing pieces of work that I've done is I have created networks or communities of entrepreneurs and businesses. And
Nice.
The foundation of that is really the belief that, nobody can do it all. No one person, no one company, nobody can do it all. And to get whatever it is you're trying to accomplish done, you need a community around you. And what that means is you want to find people that can do things that you can't. And you want to, and you often are able to do stuff other people can't. And that's where you have a marriage, literally a relationship that's really positive for everybody. So if you're in a group, where I've had a group of manufacturing firms, one makes one part, one component of a product, the other makes another component, and third company assembles it and sells it. But everybody's doing something different. They're specializing in what they do really, really well. And as they get to do that well, it returns rewards to both themselves and everyone else. So
That's interesting. Yeah.
that's a community building principle, and it can be applied, to groups of businesses. It could be applied to groups of individuals. And just to make one quick connection to, we have to ask for help. Well, I think we want to find friends and family members who like helping us, for whom we can do something that they can't. And then it's a win-win. There's a synergy there that's really beneficial to everybody. And I think that a lot of people look at their deficits, and I'm not saying I'm free of this either, but I can't do this and this and this, when we all have deficits, even healthy people, but we also have gifts.
Right.
So it's, what's the gift that, you bring or someone else brings that I can bring to this group, this meeting, this friendship that is of such value that they don't mind, helping me open the doors or whatever it is. And
Right. You kind of complement each other,
exactly,
you're saying, right?
exactly.
Someone's deficits might be your compliments and so forth, or your gifts, so to speak.
And it's a management principle too. It's like a leadership principle. You want to lead groups that, where people are all playing to their strengths, and minimizing their weaknesses. Or if they decide, hey, that's something I really want to work on, a weakness, great, let's do that. But let's learn from other people who do it better than how to do it. So,
And so you say, that you help businesses, probably large or small, and help them network. It sounds like maybe
yes.
with them between each other to some degree.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
Absolutely. Okay. So then
Absolutely.
how did that start? Like, where was that piece that you thought, like, hey, this is my niche. I kind of like doing this.
Oh,
It's like
okay.
connection, use the term coaching.
So early on, well, actually, I did my dissertation research was on business incubators, and it's very interesting. I thought that business incubators offered a great opportunity for all of the, and they're usually spaces, inexpensive space that businesses could, startups could go into so they could start to build their business. And I always thought the great potential of that was you could learn from each other, right?
Right.
So I, got connected to the National Business Incubation Association, found that very few business incubators had networking going on among them, except there were two that did, an extreme amount of networking. So I did case studies on what was going on in those places. There was an industrial incubator in Chicago, and one part of the Chicago, they had 70 firms in it, and these
Oh.
folks were learning from each other, borrowing each other's personnel, borrowing equipment, doing joint sales. I mean, it was amazing. And so the research question is, why is it happening here? And what are they doing that these other places aren't doing? One of the many factors is it was led by a woman who was totally unqualified from a business point of view. She actually was an opera singer. But her great talent was she could throw great parties. She would get two people together and she'd say, I don't want you to leave the room until you figure out the problem. Right. So she was always getting people together and they would, and sort of like say, why don't you talk to this person and talk to that person, just like the host or hostess of a party.
Right.
And a really good one makes things happen.
Yes. They put the
Right.
right people together. You're right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. They know who they invited. They know who's going to make those connections.
And if it doesn't work, you keep trying out. You know what? That person didn't. Why don't you talk to this person over here? And they were so good at it, it fundamentally changed the experience of the entrepreneurs in those incubators. They learned from everyone else. They started to know that they needed to ask, that they needed to admit that they didn't know something, that's the way you learn in any field or any profession. So that sort of got me into it. Then I started doing this in business incubators intentionally. I was invited to create incubators where this would take place and to do it virtually. And it's community building. It's very powerful.
Wow. So when you're talking then, do they do, does a company, like, walk me through it? Like, does a company reach out to you, say, here are our struggles, and then you know of other companies that maybe would help those struggles and so forth?
Well, partly, I've done some work where companies will actually invite me and said, like, we launch new products every year, but 9 times out of 10 they fail, and
Oh, yeah.
we can't. That's a rate we have to change. We want to invert that rate. We want like 9 successes out of 10. How do
Right.
we do that? And a lot of it has to do with picking the wrong people, having the wrong support systems for them, not realizing that when you're doing something new that no one's ever done before, you're creating a recipe, to use a metaphor from the kitchen. You're creating a new recipe and you're not following some existing recipe. No one's ever done this before. So
Right.
you have to approach it in a different way. You have to experiment, you have to test, you have to not spend a lot of money, see what's going to work, and then you spend more money. And this kind of goes, it cuts against the grain of a corporation, because once they find the recipe for success, they try to fit everything into that same recipe.
Yeah,
And when you
absolutely.
enter new markets, or if you're it, look, you see it in sports all the time. If you play defense and offense in football the way you did it 10 years ago, everybody knows your number, and you got to be innovating. So how do you do that? How do you create the culture where that happens? That's the kind of work that I've done a lot of.
Wow, that sounds fun, to be honest with
Yeah,
you.
it's fun.
Yeah. it's good to find that niche that, wow, you have a job that you know well, you like, and it's fun. Does that feel like you're more or less living your dream career-wise?
Yeah, but it's also, you know, it has its challenges. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, I like it.
That's good.
And to bring it back to the, like the wellness session, the FSHD Society, you know, people, one of their values is so that no one will be alone in this.
Yeah.
You know, it's a challenge for everybody. How do you form your own support group? How do you get everybody on the same page? How do you find people that can help motivate you when you're, you know, days mm-hmm. when you're down, because it's very difficult to stay motivated, you know, all of these things. How do you create that team, that
right.
Roach team, that support structure?
Hmm. I saw that there was a article that I located in FSHD Society. I don't know if it's the archives or whatnot, but you know, when you Google your name with FSHD, you do find some things, Greg.
Yes.
And it's a, you know, friendships are built intentionally. It was titled, you know, how spotlighting how loneliness, you know, equals obviously negativity. It can equal, and I think you might have said this, didn't you say this at the leadership thing, how it equals a certain amount of cigarettes that a person smokes, like how unhealthy loneliness can be.
Half a pack of cigarettes.
Yes.
Exactly. A day.
A day.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
so
if you think that's bad for you, yeah, it has an equivalency that's very serious.
Yeah.
And we're having, this is an epidemic, you know, of loneliness, not just in the FSHD community, but everywhere. So it just makes it worse for people that have a chronic illness.
How do you, I mean, can you prevent loneliness?
I think you have to work on your friendships.
Mm.
There was, I did a session, a wellness session like a year and a half ago on the latest research on friendships, which was really startling. I mean, because about a year and a half ago, there were all these articles like how many friendships you tend to lose over your lifetime unless you add to your close friends, right?
Yeah.
And how long it takes to develop a close friendship, how much effort it takes in terms of hours and frequency. And so you have to be, that's why you have to be intentional about it, you know?
Yeah, it is something that you have to work at, because you're right. If you look back at your life and think, I had friends either when I was younger, and then as you move through life, some of those friends, maybe if you're lucky, are still around, or at least you can connect still, or know who they are, or where they live, or,
right.
you know, even if it's a simple text message or a phone call once in a while. And then there's other friendships that you thought were so rich and like, this is a great connection. And then maybe you're thinking, now I don't even have that connection anymore.
Right.
How they can kind of, you know, tether off. But you're right, you do need them. I always think too, though, with friendships, sometimes I always found, and I'm sure a lot of people would agree, like some people just happen to make friends easier than others. And I know that's more of a grammar school type sentence, you know, but is it like for the person that's a little more, you know, introverted, not extroverted, not really outgoing, let's say, is it more difficult then? I mean, than to make those friendships?
I think it is. It requires two things. I think it requires maybe more effort, but also, like, you know, I have a friend who is very much an introvert, and sometimes it's surprising because, you know, he can be very social, but then what he needs to do to recover is what makes him an introvert. Like, he could spend all day like facilitating groups, and then he can't see anybody, right? Can't interact with anybody, including his wife, when he gets home for like the next 8 hours, right?
Wow. Okay.
And he knows that. And it's like, it's no problem in his relationship, but that's what he needs to do to recover. He needs to spend time by himself. So a lot of times too, you have to negotiate the terms of the relationship. And, you know, so I think sometimes introverts are not always comfortable saying, hey, I need downtime. Like, I can't spend the whole weekend with you, you know, like morning, noon, and night, and not burn
Feel
myself
space.
To a crisp, right?
Yeah, yeah. You need to kind of have that, what do they say, distance makes the heart grow fonder or something like that or whatnot. Yeah, you have
or
to have
downtime.
A little bit. Yeah, a little downtime away from each other. And,
and
I think you have to be comfortable being alone, obviously, too.
Yes. But I think that, you know, the thing is that, you know, we as a society, we're in situations where we're fewer and fewer situations where we can more easily form friendships. You know, you met them, like, you know, college was a period, intense period, typically, if you've gone to college, where you meet people. So anyway, you have to, at different parts of your life, you have to, you know, you have to put effort into it. And you have to be, I think, sometimes strategic, like, what kind of friend do I need? I don't need 20 of these kinds of friends, but I need, you know, a few more of these kinds of friends. And oftentimes I've talked to people, and I've been trying to spread this idea in the FSHD society. Don't think about, it's not just a number of friends. It's like, you know, do you have a friend that you could go on the great outdoors where, because you're in a wheelchair or you're in a walker or a cane, you go at 1/10 the speed of someone else and they're okay with that? You know, you got to find different people for different things.
Right. Yeah. Different fits to different parts of your life. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I totally agree. And I think, yeah, that's why sometimes friendships, they fall naturally away, or, and sometimes you end up maybe reconnecting again, or you build new ones based on the community or your life changes. You know, I've met a lot of people because all of a sudden Tim finds out he has FSHD, and that opened up a lot of door to more connections, even connecting like this, like I've done with these episodes. It's been fantastic. Now, when you were diagnosed, or at least close to it, right, in those teenage young years, but here you are, FSHD Society involved now. And how long have you been involved with this, with FSHD Society? And when did the Wellness Hour kind of begin? And were you a part of that beginning?
I was not a part of the beginning. I was invited. I think it started already. But I actually got involved in Philadelphia in a very early incarnation of the FSHD Society. I think it was even before the Perez's were around.
Wow. That's awesome.
And I want to mention this experience because I think it goes to the heart of something. I mean, you know, it's when you're young, you think you're indestructible. You think, you know, you have it, but you could do most things. And you want to often not think about what might be coming down the road. So I remember I went to a few sessions. I went to some bigger weekends and things like that. And I said, you know, I'm here, but I'm uncomfortable, you know, looking down the road, because right now I'm walking without any help. And, you know, but it is, you know, the ability to kind of stay connected with the reality of the present as well as the future, and not get overwhelmed by it. It's a tough dance, but I think it's an important emotional thing. And so, like, in our wellness session, we tend to have a lot more older folks.
Okay.
And who are experiencing things that, you know, maybe younger folks aren't having. That's why they have other different groups. But I do think sometimes it's really healthy for different groups to know what each other is experiencing. You know, I mean, my mother never talked about really what was going on for her as she was declining, which was a lost opportunity both for her to share whatever pain she had and loss, but also for me to learn what's possible, you know, what possibly might be my future. It might not be, it might be, you know, so.
Yeah. I think I understand that for sure. And it is a fine line. I think you said it appropriately. You don't want to know too much of the future. Not that necessarily that is your future when you see others that maybe are affected by it more, but the probability is obviously higher than someone that doesn't have the disease. So there is like a glimpse into that. And I remember even when I brought my family to the Connect conference in Florida, I didn't go to the one in Denver. And I found myself not really pre-planning this, but like as we were planning this little trip to go there, kind of telling my boys, like, you know, be aware, like you're going to see people in different situations, you know, power equipment, assisting devices, so forth, or not at all, or just walking a little different, or walking like me. And I said, you have to be, I think I even use the term like open-minded, like, but there are also people here for the same reason and the connectivity. And it's almost like all those different, you know, the disease affects us all so differently. And at the same time, if we didn't have the disease, we're all different people anyway, right? We're all so different. And I said, you have to look past that and see kind of the common of why we're all there, why we're gathering, you know? And I didn't want there to be a shock value to it where then they're taking, you know, that's all they see. Like, oh my gosh, this could be my dad. Oh my gosh, what if I have this down the line? Oh, you know, and then I just didn't want them to feel that way. And to find, as my brother would always tell me, you'll find your tribe, find your group, find the people that you connect with. I think you are one of those kind of people that do that very well. And I think you help other people find their tribe, their people that connect with them. And I think that's a remarkable gift. And I don't think too many people have that. It's one thing to find them for yourself, but I feel like it's a gift to like bring people together, and then hence they find others that are relatable to them. Is that kind of what that wellness hour feels like when you're involved with it? Like a connectivity of so many?
Yes. And, yeah. And we're trying to, it's hard. I think it's hard for people to, necessarily confront the big challenges. Like just to give you one example, as some of the people in our group age, their helpers, their husbands, their wives, their spouses are getting older too. And so, you know, if they can't get out of bed without help and their partner has to go to the hospital, they can't get out of bed. You know, and trust me, I didn't think about that. You know, my wife's still healthy, but in 10 years that could be an issue. And, it's hard. I recognize that. So they quickly had to put support systems in place. Who can I call? Will they come over in the middle of the night to me get out of bed, help my husband get, or wife, whatever. But, and we all have different issues, but I'm just saying that it was great that someone brought that up. I mean, I have to say, I don't think this is weird, but I love to hear other people's experiences because it makes me feel, more normal, even though the normal isn't the right word. It's like, someone has difficulty bending down and getting, excuse my being so graphic, but up and down from the toilet seat, right?
Right, right.
Someone said this in a group meeting, and I walked up to that person. I said, "Thank you for telling me that."
Thank you,
because I have the same problem, and I'm worried about breaking the toilet seat. And you're like saying, "This is what comes with the territory," and I feel better.
And using that example, as you say, I think if those that don't talk about it, I think that all of that almost equals the loneliness down the road, because I can't tell anybody about this.
Right.
Exactly. They're not going to understand, and then you start to disengage, and then it might start with just with a simple, normal physical act that people have to do every day, and how that's tough for you. But all of a sudden you meet a group of people and they're like, "Hey, I have that same problem." You're like, "What?" Now there goes that, barrier. It's gone. And people are talking about those maybe uncomfortable things, but we're humans. We all got to deal with that. And the fact that someone else has to deal with it in the same fashion, now it's not loneliness anymore, having to deal with it yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's what we do. We try to facilitate sessions, obviously on different subjects, where people can share, their experiences, because,
What are some of the topics that you've covered? I'm putting you on the spot, so I'm sure there's been a lot of topics. But
we did a chair dancing session.
Chair dancing.
Just played popular videos, like.
That's awesome.
I don't know. Listen, I love to dance. I was a dancer. I started off one of my talks at an FSHD conference saying that, I really wanted to be a solid gold dancer. Now that's.
Oh, man. I remember 70s. That show.
Yes.
I remember that show.
That was my dream. So I had to give that up. But I love to dance. I love to move. So I do it in a chair now,
Yeah. Yeah. Any way you can.
Any way I can.
Yeah.
Any way I can.
Wow. So, that's awesome.
And we did, we had like a drinking session. Everybody was drinking, both alcoholic and non-alcoholic drinks. Mm-hmm. And one August, where it was a toasting, we were just toasting to things that we were grateful for.
Oh, that's fantastic.
We did the session on the FSHD and family. We did a session on FSHD on friendship. Because I wanted to put the friendship challenge in context that, if you're feeling lonely, it's not just you, right? And it's not just people with FSHD. This is something that's going on throughout the country, really throughout the world. So we're trying to put that in context. And then, of course, there are many sessions on just, how do you buy a wheelchair? You know, how do you deal with doctors, that
Yeah,
kind of stuff.
a lot of informative things, and then
Right.
sharing experiences through that to help you kind of eliminate some of those other barriers just
Right.
by connecting. How many people usually partake per session, roughly, do you think?
We have an average of 30 people.
Wow, that's a lot.
And there's a core group of people, but there's always like 10, 15 that are different every time, you know.
Wow. So if someone wanted to be a part of the group, how do they go about that?
Just, I think it's on the list of monthly activities. It's usually the second Monday of the month from 5 to 6 o'clock Eastern. And join. I mean, you can sign up for it and join and see what you like. Sometimes we, you know, do breakout sessions, but it's, you know, it's a good thing to get connected to.
Yeah. It seems so simple, right? You come up with topics, you have some leaders that arrange it, but yet it's so deep at the same time, it sounds like.
Hopefully, yes. Yeah. And it you know, it's hard to know what people walk away from, but I think, you know, we like to try to talk about things so people can say, I never thought about that.
Yeah.
I did a session. I just want to let you one thing, like I did a session this summer at the conference, virtual, and it was about our relationships with you know, to our body, to our mind, to our you know, heart, etc. And I had a panel of what I called exemplars, not a panel of experts, but exemplars. So they're all of us, all of them had FSHD. And so my question to them is, you know, once you realized you had FSHD, how did your relationship to your body change? How did your relationship to your heart and emotions change? How did your, you know, relationship to your mind change, if at all? And people spoke about that. But what was so interesting is there were four very different people, four extremely different answers. And a lot of people, it just opened participants' eyes about, I feel like that sometimes. And I never really thought about it. I really paid attention to it. I felt like that sometimes, you know, and it broadens the palette of emotions that you become aware of.
That's deep. And yeah, I think it's very fascinating hour two. I'm not, shame on me for not even participating yet. You totally got me hooked that I'm going to do that. That is on my list. You know, I plug it. I do put it out there. I talk about, hey, check out one of this group, along with so many other groups that have grown within this FSHD community. It's not just on social media. You can find some great groups there too, but this is real interaction. I mean, this is, you know, yeah, it's virtual, sure, but 30 people, I mean, sharing and talking about these things, it sounds fun. I assume it's also fun as well as interactive and education, right? Especially when you're talking about drinking. I mean,
So listen, exactly. And you know, I like to facilitate. I've had a lot of experience, and I, you know, I like to have fun. I mean, you have to laugh every day as much as possible, given everything else that's going on in our lives and the world.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's
we have to. We have to. So last question for you. I'd like to ask this a lot to the fantastic guests, including yourself, that have been on this platform. It's, you have someone, let's say, that, you know, just happened to wander into this podcast. They're newly diagnosed, listening to you, Greg, maybe for, you know, and maybe myself, you know, for the first time. But what kind of advice would you give that person, either with coping with it, the steps forward, now that they know what they know?
I think it's really important to reach out to other people. And that doesn't mean, you know, that maybe your tribe, you don't know who your tribe is, right? But you have to go, the metaphor my wife likes to use is, you've got to kiss a lot of frogs till you figure out what you want, right? Talk to people with FSHD. What's it mean? Well, maybe you don't want to hang out with them right now. Maybe you want to hang out with people that are more like jocks or something, but don't let life just carry you on its way. You need to be in charge of your own life and make the choices that work for you. So I'm like, reach out to people. And it doesn't mean that you get involved in all the things that we're doing. You may not need it or want it, but make a decision consciously and intentionally about that. So
I like that.
You have to go out there and do things.
Yeah. Don't be alone. Don't go down to that side of it. You have a kind of a choice to make at that point.
Yes.
try not to lose yourself in a diagnosis or bad news. It's very hard to do that for sure. But groups like the Wellness Hour, I think, is one of those great places to start.
And also, listen, if the groups that you participate in don't work for you, let's find a new group.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
We did a session on at the conference this past summer on art and you know, FSHD, and there's going to be a 2-hour session on it at the next wellness session. It's
wow, that's, you know, great.
So people, and we found that out because a lot of people resonated with it. A lot of people said, I really, you know, I do art, this, I can relate to this topic. Let's do something more frequently on it. Great. Whatever you want, you can make things happen for yourself.
Yeah. You can meet more people with the same likes despite the disease, and you'll end up, they'll find themselves probably talking more about art than FSHD.
Right.
And now, really, that's their connection.
Find your tribe.
Right. Absolutely. I know. Always search for that. It should always be growing, in my opinion. So I'm glad my tribe just grew a little bit more today.
Yes. Right. It was a pleasure.
I'm glad I saw you at the volunteer conference there, the leadership conference. I thought, this guy is fantastic, the way he carries himself. Right away, I was like, looking for your email, man. I'm like, oh, he's on the list. All right, here we go. And I'm so glad that you accepted the invite to be on the episode today. It was a blast. And I'm sure we will connect with you again and have you on again.
Good.
For sure.
Thanks very much, Tim. It was a pleasure.
Yeah. Likewise. Thanks, Greg. Thanks for all you do.
You're welcome.
Hi, everyone. I've got some exciting news for you from the FSHD community. If you've ever felt the unpredictability of FSHD or wish there was more accurate research and information out there, and I know you have, then listen up. I'm thrilled to tell you about Better Life FSHD, a groundbreaking new research platform from the FSHD Society that's changing the game for those of us living with FSHD. Better Life is your one-stop hub for tracking symptoms, accessing personalized resources like articles and videos relevant to you. And the best part, as you take surveys and track your symptoms, you provide FSHD researchers with better data to understand this complex, understudied disease. And a better understanding can lead to faster treatments, something every one of us can get behind. So head over to betterlifefshd.org and join the study. It only takes a minute to get signed up. Together, we can change the future for everyone affected by FSHD. I've done this. It's a simple process. I challenge you to do the same. Again, that's betterlifefshd.org. Now let's get back to the show. So that's the theme. If it's that obvious to you, it's very obvious to me. It is connectivity. It is fight loneliness like it's a pack of dogs chasing you. Stay away from it. Do everything you can. I'm a person that I'm very comfortable being alone. Now, I have a family and have some friends. That group has maybe shrunk over the years for sure. But bottom line is, I'm okay with being alone. But it doesn't lead to loneliness. I'm comfortable being alone because then I can do the things I want to do in those moments. Or I can, as Greg mentioned in that story, a friend of his has to decompress after a lot of socializing. I get that too. Makes sense. I can relate to that. You have to still have your own time, but you can't go down the road so far that loneliness becomes a problem of health, of mental health, and then physical health, and so on. You need to fight that all you can, because FSHD can be lonely. Just like any other chronic disease can be, you feel like you're by yourself. Sometimes I've heard people, and I can relate as well to this, is that even though they have a family, they live in a house with other people, they still feel alone because they feel isolated in their own body of what they're dealing with. And even though they may have a spouse, a partner, family, friends that are right in there with them, it's still not the same. But it will never be. They can never relate like you can relate. Even another person that has FSHD can't relate to like you can relate to it. But making the connections to kind of bridge those gaps a little closer will help you not feel isolated, alone. So I loved having Greg on. Briefly about the leadership conference. It was the seventh year the FSHD Society put it on. I think it's a fantastic way for the people that are the leaders in the community, meaning chapter leaders, walk and roll leaders, virtual meeting group leaders from, you know, wellness hour, early onset, and so forth. And they get kind of their time to talk about, you know, what they're doing within their groups. They can meet each other, maybe sometimes for the first time or since the last time they met, because it's annual. And this was the seventh year. And I wasn't to one since the first year. And at that time, I was trying to build a chapter in Wisconsin, and it really didn't take off. I mean, it kind of still lives on the site. So if anybody's in Wisconsin and would like to take the torch, please let me know start building the Wisconsin chapter. That'd be great. But it just didn't take off. I kind of wanted to concentrate more on the podcast, and so it went. And so then I kind of drifted away from going to those because I thought, what's the podcast possibly going to do? I'm not really a leader of anything. I'm just doing the podcast. I have massive help and support from the FSHD Society. Aaron now, who does so much of the work of this show. It's fantastic what she does. And I know she was there. So it was great to meet her. So that, I think, is the part that I have to remember, is the connection. So when Beth asked, would you go? And even Aaron kind of definitely included me and encouraged me to go. And I said, yes, because there are some social things, meeting people. I know some people I probably interviewed. I was like, do I remember those interviews to those details? Of course not. But the connections were still there. I had great conversations with people. I didn't even see everybody. But the people I did interact with, it made it a good time, made it something to remember. I also had the humbling experience of 20 minutes to speak in front of the group, which was very humbling. And I really enjoyed that part of it, which has kind of opened up the door for me to go beyond, you know, even just what I do with this podcast and coaching. You know, I want to pursue more life coaching. Greg, to me, feels like a business coach. I loved when he said that. That's one of my takeaways for sure. Anytime I hear that word coaching, I'm very intrigued. And to what he does, feels like he has quite the gift of connections. And what a great asset to our community to have somebody like this that does this for a job, a business, an entrepreneur, a person that can connect businesses and people, that also helps problem solve and bring people together so they can grow together. And you have that kind of person in your community, within your leadership, it's huge. It's a huge asset. So I'm really, really glad that Greg could share his story here on the show and that he's part of this group. So if you want to be a part of the show, please email me, fshdradio@fshdsociety.org is the email address. Always want to know if you want to be on the show. Guest book is wide open. We're filling within the year. We have a lot of guest spots to fill in throughout the years. Help me fill that guest book. Love to hear about your story. Some people say, if I do that, though, I'm a little nervous. I promise I'll make you feel super comfortable. Have a good time. We'll talk. We'll get to know you, and the community will get to know you as well. I think you have something to bring to the community. So if you're thinking about maybe emailing me, thinking about possibly being a guest on the show, think no longer, act. Because I can tell you there's something that you can give to the community that they need. And I'd love to connect you with them so that can happen. So fshdradio@fshdsociety.org. Thank you to the FSHD Society for helping bring this show together each and every episode. It's so much fun to do, and we continue to move forward through 2025, and excited to keep bringing more episodes to you. And thanks again to Greg and the Wellness Hour. And yes, you can check that out. It's on the calendar of events. If you just simply go there, the calendar button is like probably the main thing I go to. It is exactly what you need to find, folks. And it is like the one-stop shop for all the things going on. So please do that. Check it out. A lot of different things going on. If I look now, I think they're going to have one in March is going to be the next event for the Wellness Hour. But I encourage you, go to fshdsociety.org and take a look on the calendar of events, and you'll find not only the Wellness Hour, but other things you can be involved with. Thanks again for being a part of the show. I hope you enjoyed this episode. We'll see you next time. And you've been listening to FSHD Straight Talk. I've been your host, Tim. Thank you.